From the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain. I'm Tori Maguire and it is Tuesday, May 12. For the duration of the COVID-19 crisis, Please Explain is coming to you 5 days a week. Since yesterday, nationwide, Australia has reported 7 confirmed cases of coronavirus. Our most populated state, New South Wales, recorded no new cases for the first time since February 29. I'm joined now by our senior culture writer, Nathaniel Cooper. Nathaniel Cooper, thanks for joining me on Please Explain for the very first time.
Thanks for having me, Tori.
You're our senior culture writer for the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, and I got you on today because I wanted to ask how our arts sector and our entertainment sector is coping with the pandemic lockdown.
Look, that's a simple question with a really complicated answer because the industry has obviously been completely decimated by the coronavirus social gathering restrictions. But in a weird way, it's actually doing okay. It's still going. There's live stream gigs happening. People are able to see entertainment. They're able to access their favorite artists. So on one hand, it's really good. People are getting the opportunity to reach their fans all over the world because of the internet. But on the other hand, there is no live entertainment happening. There are no gigs happening and there's no money coming into the industry.
All those live streaming, we're all probably listening to more music than ever while we're sitting at home waiting for this to be over. And it is lovely being able to pop onto social media and see one of your favourites in their living room performing a song for you. But they don't make any money out of that, do they?
No, they don't directly make money out of it. There are a few gigs that are a live stream that you buy tickets to. The Memo Music Hall in Melbourne's been doing ticketed events, for example, and the artists do draw income from that. But something the artists are able to draw income from through these live streams is to encourage their fans to go and buy their merch. And a couple of artists I've spoken to during the pandemic have been making a small amount of income through selling merchandise, but it's not a lot of money at all.
Has there been any government support whatsoever for people in the arts? Because they've got complicated employment arrangements, don't they?
They do have complicated employment arrangements, and the JobKeeper payment does capture a lot of people in the arts and entertainment industry, but it also misses a whole bunch of people who haven't been employed by their employer for long enough or don't meet the criteria. So they're eligible for the job seeker payments, but that's significantly lower. On a state level and a local council level, there are initiatives in place. Some state governments have injected money directly into the entertainment industry. And, the City of Sydney, for example, are doing about $1 million worth of grants that artists can apply for. But a big problem is there's no cohesive response to the challenges that the entertainment industry are facing.
So what are they asking for? What would they like to see happen?
There has been a range of different requests made, and one of the earliest came from Live Performance Australia, which is the lobby group that lobbies on behalf of the live performance industry and was backed by the three major touring companies, Frontier and Chug, TEG and Live Nation. They actually sent a letter to the Prime Minister asking for $650 million to support the industry. And they have a whole plan of how that would be delivered, some of it through Support Act, which is the organisation that provides financial and mental health support for the live entertainment industry. Some of it's directly injecting into organisations that need money, and some of it to be delivered to struggling artists.
How much is the Australian music live performance industry worth, Nathaniel?
It's actually quite a significant amount. So the last major study into the contribution of the live music industry to the economy showed the sector contributed $15.7 billion. And that's just the live music sector. That's not taking into account your operas and theatre companies and musicals and things like that. It's a massive multi-billion dollar industry. And it's easy to think when you're talking about this that you're just talking about Cate Blanchett and Opera Australia. But I know that the three major touring companies, they use 600 ancillary businesses that all have their own employees. And then when you think of a place like the Sydney Opera House, they have hundreds and hundreds of staff that, put the set in and out and turn the lights on and off and pour your wine. So the industry is massive. It employs a huge number of people from the top to the bottom.
None of us are able to answer with any certainty what the future holds over the next 6 months and the next 12 months. But what are people saying to you, Nathaniel, about how live music or any other arts performances could be managed coming back into a socially distant world?
The touring companies particularly are already thinking about this. They're already activating their contacts within particularly the domestic industry for how they can start live music again. There's a balance that needs to be made for, wanting people to be working and people being able to see live music. and also what's going to be commercially viable for them to do that. They don't really know what the number of people it's going to require to make this work, but they are working on it. And they're talking about things like, you know, when the time's right, you might go to a 1,000-seat venue but only have 500 people in there. I was at the Opera House on Saturday night and sitting in there and thinking, this place holds 1,500 people, but if you had 700 people in there, they could be all very, very far apart and more socially distant than you are at Woolworths. They don't know what it's going to look like, but they have plans for when the time is right.
I did hear promoter Michael Chugg the other day talking about bringing back festivals, and that's got to be a tricky equation, packing thousands of people into a paddock somewhere.
It's really interesting. So Falls Festival have committed to doing their 2020-2021 festival this year with an all-Australian lineup, which is super exciting. I can't see how you can do that. I don't know how a festival like Falls with 100,000 people probably go to that over the course of the run of the festival. I don't know how you can do that in a socially distant, safe way. Maybe Australia will look really different by Christmas time when Falls is on, but you know, if the virus is still out there, I don't know how Falls can do that. And I'm really excited to see what it is they actually do to make it work.
And given those festivals, they make money because of the scale. Mini versions are going to be logistically challenging and financially challenging, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. It costs a lot of money to bring a whole lot of artists together for a weekend, and you need a lot of people there to pay for itself, let alone for anyone to make a profit out of it. So having a festival that would normally have 10,000 people, having only 5,000 people there, that's a really tricky act to balance the budget.
Can we talk about TV, Nathaniel? Is there any television production underway in Australia at the moment?
There is, actually. Neighbours just went into production again with extremely strict social distancing measures. And it's really interesting that, you know, our beloved Neighbours is a world leader in how you can go about making TV again. And I think there's going to be producers all around Australia and all over the world watching how they do this. So they're using like camera tricks to make it look like people aren't really far apart. They've rewritten the scripts so there's no kissing and things like that, and doing the bold and the beautiful long stares instead of making out. So that's really interesting, and it can work for something like Neighbours. Whether it could work for a Game of Thrones is a different story, but I think a lot of people are going to be looking to what Fremantle's doing with Neighbours to see how they can restart their productions.
What about the reality TV shows? Are they filming at all at the moment?
The Block went back into production, which is an easier one to do. It's not so much about, you know, kissing strangers. Channel 10 are committed to continuing with The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. I don't know how they're going to do it. That will be fascinating to see how they do socially distant dates and how you keep the spark alive for The Bachelor and his ladies, but also for the audience as well, how they're going to manage that. That will be really interesting.
So, Nathaniel, while we're all sitting at home with our multiple streaming services, have you got any advice for us on what we should be watching at the moment for those of us who haven't had much time to think about it?
I've actually tried to step back. I've been in isolation longer than most people, and all I did was binge watch television. I watched the entire 12 or 20 seasons of West Wing because I haven't done that for a long time.
That is one of my favourites, I have to admit.
It's amazing. And I went back and watched Derry Girls again because that's an incredible TV show. I think the best advice when it comes to binge watching TV is find something that's going to uplift you. This is a really difficult time for everybody. And, you know, that's why I watch Derry Girls, because you can't help but feel warm and fuzzy about that hilarious television show. And it does take you away from the mundanity of this and the challenges we're all facing. So find something that's going to make you laugh. Go and find Fleabag on Amazon Prime.
Although the first season of Fleabag I found very depressing. It got better.
It is depressing in some ways, but it's also a little bit life-affirming and makes you feel like you're not the weirdest person in the room.
And it's very funny.
And it's very funny, and Phoebe Waller-Bridge is astonishingly talented in everything she does.
Well, I have just for the first time come to Killing Eve.
Oh, Killing Eve.
Which she wrote the first season for, and I'm completely hooked.
It is such a brilliant TV show. And if you want something else to get hooked on, actually, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon Prime. It's another one that is super uplifting and life-affirming.
We're all just searching for the television version of Spaghetti Bolognese, really, aren't we?
We are.
Nathaniel, thanks so much for joining me on Please Explain.
Thanks for having me, Tori.
Today's episode of Please Explain was produced by Yuji Shimada and Amelia Maguire. The journalists, editors, photographers, producers and tech team at The Age and The Sydney Morning Herald are working tirelessly at the moment to cover the COVID-19 crisis factually, fairly and comprehensively. For coverage you can trust, visit our websites or buy our papers. To support our journalism, you can subscribe via our homepages or just search, subscribe, The Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.